What if I told you that a locked-down corporate IT network fighting off a cyber attack and a massive black hole collapsing in deep space are governed by the exact same laws of physics?
I mean, it sounds completely absurd on the surface, right? Because one is made of silicon and code, and the other is, made of crushed stars and gravity.
Right, but the mathematics connecting them are astonishingly real. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are exploring a theoretical mathematics book chapter titled The Structured Factorial, a mathematical treatise on topologically constrained probabilities.
It is quite the title.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
But our mission today is to understand how a single mind-bending mathematical concept manages to unify three worlds that seem to have absolutely nothing in common:
Yeah.
network security, thermodynamics, and the astrophysics of black holes.
Yeah, and to understand how those worlds connect, we have to start with something grounded. We really need to look at how we measure possibility.
Which brings us back to good old high school math.
Oh yeah, everyone's favorite.
Right. But there are certain concepts that stick with you because they feel so tangible, like the factorial, n factorial, written with that dramatic exclamation point.
Like if you have five objects, 5 factorial is just 5 times 4 times 3 times 2 times 1.
Exactly. 120.
Yeah.
It's the number of ways you can shuffle those objects. Think about shuffling a standard deck of 52 cards. The classical math tells us that every single combination, every possible ordering of those cards, is out there waiting to be dealt.
And in classical probability, every single one of those shuffles is treated as equally valid. You have, total freedom to move from one state to any other. It's an expression of pure, unconstrained possibility.
But reality rarely gives you total freedom. I mean, physics gets in the way, rules get in the way.
Right.
If you are shuffling cards, maybe the dealer's physical limitations or the strict rules of the casino prevent certain kinds of shuffles from ever taking place. Not every theoretically possible arrangement is actually allowed to happen in the real world.
Because the universe, whether we are talking about physical matter or digital information, is full of constraints. Causal constraints, topological constraints, thermodynamic constraints. Because of that, probability isn't just this uniform, flat landscape where anything goes.
And that tension, the tension between what is mathematically possible and what a system actually allows, that is the core of the structured factorial.
Right. The author uses this fancy cursive F to represent the concept.
Yeah, and it generalizes the standard factorial by only counting the admissible permutations. It essentially filters the math through a constraint topology.
So instead of asking how many ways things can be arranged in a vacuum, it asks, well, how many ways can things be arranged without breaking the physical or digital laws of the system you are actually in?
Let's ground this with a basic computer access control example they use in the chapter. Imagine a system with three operations: read, write, and execute.
Okay, classic IT.
Right, so in a purely mathematical, unconstrained world, 3 factorial gives us 6 possible ways to order those actions. You could, I don't know, write, then execute, then read, or execute, read, write.
All 6 paths are wide open.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But secure systems don't operate in a vacuum. They have strict policies.
Yeah, a standard policy might dictate that you must read a file before you can write to it, and you must write to it before you can execute it.
So out of those 6 mathematical possibilities, only one sequence actually obeys the rules:
Yeah.
read, then write, then execute.
Right.
So in this constrained system, the structured factorial of 3 isn't 6, it's 1.
And this introduces a really crucial metric from the text, the security confinement ratio.
Oh, this part was fascinating.
Yeah, you calculate this by dividing the structured factorial by the standard factorial. It quantifies the fraction of the total state space that actually remains open to use. So in that read, write, execute example, the ratio is 1/6.
Now, I read the section explaining this, and I definitely need a translation, because the author makes this massive conceptual leap here, claiming that a security policy isn't a list of forbidden actions, but rather a partial order or a directed acyclic graph.
That is quite a mouthful of jargon.
Break that down for me. What does that actually mean for the architecture of a digital system?
So think of a directed acyclic graph like a river system flowing downhill. The water can fork and diverge into different streams, but it can never flow backward to where it started. It's a one-way street.
Okay, that makes sense.
In security terms, this redefines how we visualize defense. We typically think of security as a bouncer at a door checking a list of forbidden actions. Like, if you aren't on the list, you can't come in.
Right.
But a directed acyclic graph means the door doesn't even exist.
Oh, wow. So you are describing a physical maze.
Yes.
Like if you have a jet pack, you operate by the rules of the standard factorial, you can fly, anywhere, in any order. The whole maze is open to you.
Because you aren't constrained.
Right. But the structured factorial takes the jetpack away. You are forced to navigate the physical walls. You can only move where the paths actually connect.
And that leads to a really profound conclusion from the text, which is that security is essentially curvature in a state space.
Curvature, like in physics.
Exactly. Imagine a flat sheet of rubber representing a computer network. A marble rolls across it in a straight line. That's your jetpack scenario. Now, drop a bowling ball onto the rubber. The sheet curves.
Oh, I see.
The marble's path is now completely dictated by that geometry. Navigating a secure system isn't about asking for permission at a series of locked gates. It's about moving through a space where the geometry itself physically forces you down specific, sanctioned paths.
So if the pathway to restricted data simply does not mathematically exist from an attacker's current position, how does a hacker actually hack?
That is the million-dollar question.
All right, and this is where the math transitions into physics. The chapter moves from static combinatorics to the dynamic laws of thermodynamics.
Because if security is a geometric space with walls, an attacker is essentially injecting chaos into that space to forge new paths. They are, you know, trying to warp the rubber sheet back to flat.
Wow.
And in physics and information theory, we measure that chaos as entropy.
I want to pause on that word for a second.
Mm-hmm.
When most people hear entropy, they think of, like, heat or physical decay, a rotting apple or a rusty car. But here we are talking about digital information.
Right. In a digital context, entropy is the measure of unpredictability. A system functioning normally is highly predictable, so it has low entropy.
But when a hacker gets in?
Yeah, when a hacker starts running randomized scripts, scanning thousands of ports, or injecting malware, they are rapidly increasing the unpredictability of the network. They are driving the digital entropy up.
And the chapter introduces an entropy work duality to explain this. It states that the work required to navigate a secure space is directly tied to our security confinement ratio. Specifically, the required work equals the negative logarithm of that ratio.
It's brilliant. The smaller the ratio, meaning the fewer valid paths there are compared to total possibilities, the more computational work an attacker must expend to find a way through. It acts as a literal mathematical barrier.
Which brings us to the absolute centerpiece of the source material, the security threshold equation.
This is where it all comes together.
Yeah, this equation calculates something called the damping coefficient, represented by the Greek letter lambda. Lambda is basically the amount of pushback or resistance the system needs to actively apply to maintain containment as the threat's entropy evolves.
Because the system isn't static, it acts dynamically. The equation constantly calculates how much the network needs to tighten its own internal geometry based on three very distinct components.
I look at this equation like a smart shock absorber system on a high-performance car.
Yeah.
The first component is the thermodynamic term, and it scales linearly with threat entropy.
Meaning what, exactly?
Well, if the road gets slightly bumpy, say a threat actor pings a firewall a few extra times, the shock absorbers stiffen proportionally.
Ah, got it. So it acts as a baseline response to the rising temperature of the threat environment.
Exactly. But the second component, the topological term, handles the severe spikes. This one amplifies superlinearly based on a confinement exponent.
And the real-world translation of that is that security rules intersect, right?
Yep. A company might require two-factor authentication, plus a rule that you must be on a recognized company laptop, plus a rule that large data transfers require dual manager approval.
So the walls of our maze are crossing and overlapping. When an attacker tries to navigate these intercepting rules, the difficulty multiplies exponentially.
Going back to the car analogy, if you hit a massive crater while swerving at high speed, the suspension doesn't just get a little stiffer. It aggressively locks down to prevent the car from flipping over entirely.
Right. And in actual network terms, this means if a compromised user suddenly requests access to like 500 secure employee records in 1 second, the system doesn't just prompt them for a password again. It exponentially increases the computational difficulty of making the next request. It creates intense digital friction.
And then we have the third component of the equation, which blew my mind, the curl penalty. The math literally has a term designed to detect threat curl. But, I mean, how does a mathematical equation identify a loop in a computer network?
Well, it borrows from vector calculus. In physics, curl measures the rotation or spinning of a fluid or a magnetic field. Hackers often use deceptive loops. They send automated requests that bounce around a network's architecture to confuse the defenses, creating a sort of digital vortex.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, so by applying the mathematical concept of curl to the request pathways, the equation detects when data paths start spinning in circles.
And once it flags that deceptive looping behavior, it suppresses it. It violently dams out the oscillation. Instead of the network vibrating out of control and crashing under the weight of a million looping requests, the math absorbs that chaotic energy and forces the threat into a dead end.
I mean, this all sounds incredibly elegant on a chalkboard.
It really does.
But the real test is dropping this equation into a live server environment to see if it actually stops a human threat.
And Section 3 of the chapter covers exactly that. They set up a real-world zero-trust deployment in a corporate network. This network had 24 primary access states. So our on factorial is 24.
Which is a massive state space. 24 factorial is roughly 6.2 times 10 to the 23rd power.
That's huge.
An astronomically large number of potential pathways for data to travel.
So during normal everyday operations, you know, with employees checking emails, accessing databases, and writing code, the security confinement ratio hovered at 0.42.
Meaning roughly 42% of the state space was smoothly navigable, the internal geometry was open, allowing data to flow easily for legitimate users.
But then the researchers launched a simulated phishing attack. A threat was introduced and the attack surface entropy spiked. Immediately, the confinement ratio plummeted from 0.42 down to 0.08.
The mathematical walls of the maze just slammed shut. Valid paths vanished instantly.
And because the network was governed by the security threshold equation, that massive drop in the ratio triggered the damping coefficient. Our lambda shock absorbers fired. The resistance ramped up to 3.7 times the baseline level.
Wow.
The chapter notes that the threat converged into an audit sink in exactly 17 inference steps. Let's define those terms because they are really crucial to understanding the victory here. What is an inference step?
An inference step is simply a computational move. It's the number of analytical decisions the system takes to evaluate and box in the anomaly.
And the audit sink.
That's the trap. In plain English, an audit sink means the system quietly reroutes the hacker into a quarantined digital sandbox.
So the attacker thinks they're still navigating the real network and moving toward valuable data, but they are completely isolated.
Exactly, and every single keystroke is being recorded.
The threat was completely absorbed and neutralized in just 17 computational moves.
And honestly, this simulation is a death knell for static firewalls. The old model of building a tall digital wall and just hoping nobody finds a ladder is fundamentally obsolete.
It really is.
This validates that a system can autonomously tighten its own internal physics the millisecond. An attack alters the mathematical landscape. It ensures a non-oscillatory collapse of the threat.
And the beauty is the network doesn't panic. It doesn't shut down and lock legitimate users out. It simply increases the mathematical gravity around the threat until it cannot move.
That concept of mathematical gravity sets up the final and, frankly, the most bizarrely fascinating part of this deep dive.
Oh, absolutely. The author takes this threshold equation and pushes it to its absolute universe-breaking limit.
Right.
We know what happens when the confinement ratio drops to 0.08. But what happens when a system goes into total lockdown? Like, what happens when a threat is so severe that no valid paths exist at all?
That is the extreme limit where the structured factorial goes all the way to zero.
And according to the equation, if the ratio hits zero, the damping coefficient, lambda, goes to infinity.
The system's resistance becomes infinite.
Right. The probability of any data escaping the compromised area drops to absolute zero.
It forms a perfect, inescapable trap.
But the author goes far beyond calling it a perfect trap.
Yeah.
The conclusion presented is that this state of infinite digital damping is mathematically isomorphic to a black hole event horizon.
Isomorphic is the operative word there. It means that two seemingly different systems share the exact same underlying mathematical structure.
Okay, hold on. You are losing me a bit here. I understand that the math formulas might look similar on a piece of paper, but you aren't saying my office Wi-Fi router is literally generating a gravitational pull during a cyber attack.
Right.
How is this more than just a clever metaphor?
Well, it isn't physical gravity, but it is structural equivalence in the realm of information theory. You have to look at what a black hole actually is. Beyond being a physical object with immense gravity, a black hole is the universe's ultimate information trap. Nothing, not even light, which is just information traveling at ultimate speed, can escape its boundary. The author meticulously maps the variables of our network security equation directly to the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy equations used in astrophysics.
And the mapping is incredibly detailed. The attack surface entropy generated by our theoretical hacker maps directly to the physical entropy of the black hole. The logarithmic volume of the network's state space maps perfectly to the surface area of the event horizon.
We are bridging the gap between digital data and physical reality. Information behaves according to fundamental laws, regardless of the medium. The chapter even demonstrates this using Hawking radiation.
Right. Hawking radiation is the idea that before a physical black hole is fully formed and perfectly stable, it leaks a tiny bit of thermal radiation into space.
And in our digital model, when the damping coefficient, lambda, is extremely high but still finite.
Like right as the corporate network is locking down but hasn't reached infinite resistance yet?
Exactly. During that window, there is a mathematically calculable finite probability of data leaking out of the quarantine zone.
And the probability of that data leakage perfectly mirrors the physical equation for Hawking radiation leaking from a cosmic black hole. That is just
mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. The fundamental equations governing the formation of a digital event horizon in a server farm are mathematically indistinguishable from the equations governing a cosmic event horizon in outer space.
Because when probability is topologically constrained to the point of zero escape, the universe behaves the same way, whether it is made of silicon or stardust.
The text calls it the Hawking lambda duality. It reminds us that the rigid boundaries we draw between disciplines, you know, putting computer science in one box, thermodynamics in another, and astrophysics in a third, those boundaries are largely artificial. The underlying architecture of reality is deeply interconnected.
It really puts things into perspective.
It does. I mean, we started this journey with the simplest math imaginable, just a standard factorial counting how many ways you can shuffle a deck of cards. We explored how adding rules creates the structured factorial, filtering out the impossible.
Right.
We watched that concept evolve into dynamic, thermodynamic damping, acting like an intelligent shock absorber to isolate a corporate phishing attack into an audit sink in 17 steps.
And we ended up staring at the event horizon of a mathematical black hole. The scale of that progression is remarkable.
So the next time you were at work and you hit an access denied wall, or a system refuses to let you bypass a security protocol, take a moment to reframe the experience. You aren't just looking at a frustrating IT rule.
No, you are literally experiencing the localized curvature of a digital universe.
You're bouncing off the walls of a mathematical maze that is actively dynamically damping its own entropy.
It certainly adds a layer of cosmic significance to forgetting a password.
It really does. But the author leaves us with one final, incredibly provocative thought in the open problems section of the chapter. They casually mention quantum coherent tunneling as an unknown variable for future research.
Oh, that opens up a whole new can of worms.
Think about the massive implications of that. If a perfectly secure, locked-down digital network is mathematically equivalent to a black hole event horizon, and if future hackers successfully gain access to quantum computing power, what happens to cybersecurity?
Will breaking into a network no longer be about finding a lost digital key?
Exactly. Will it require hackers to essentially bend the laws of digital quantum gravity to tunnel their way through an event horizon? I highly encourage you to chew on that thought the next time you log into your email.